and welcome to Small Biz Matters. You're live in the studios of Triple H FM and across the Community Radio Network. You're listening to People, Policy, Purpose. Now, there's a sector of the small business community that is even more regulated than others, but there's a good reason for that. Due to some bad actors in the sector in the past, franchising has been under scrutiny, and so has the government and the way franchise code is managed. It's not just a lock, stop or shop or barrel that your brand that you're buying. You're entering a complex contract, which is in fact a long-term relationship. And like all good long-term relationships, things can sometimes turn sour. Franchisees can sometimes be the victim of a poor contract term, unfair or inequitable relationships with the company they paid a lot of money to for the privilege of using the brand, and they may not get the relationship they paid for. According to the Franchise Council of Australia, franchising is a $146 billion sector and there are approximately 1,200 different franchise systems in Australia. That's a big chunk of the economy we need to get right. In 2014, the government introduced the Competition and Consumer Industry Codes Franchising Regulation 2014. Franchising Code regulates the conduct between participants in franchising, which is regulated by the ACCC. The code was created to establish walls between the two parties to make the relationship more fair and equitable. Today's show, we welcome Michael Shaper, who's going to tell us about the 2024 Franchise Code Review. He was one of Australia's first small business commissioners, a previous deputy commissioner for the ACCC, named COSBOA's Small Business Champion in 2009, and a passionate advocate for small businesses around Australia.
Welcome to Small Biz Matters, a show where we are dedicated to empowering small businesses and advisors to engage with policy and advocacy. Why? Because what government does very much matters to all small biz, good and bad. Sponsored by the Australian Small Business and Family Enterprise Ombudsman's Office, each week we sit down with experts, advocates, business leaders, policymakers and politicians to dive into specific areas of government policy that affects your clients and your business. We'll give you the heads up on what's coming down the policy pipeline. Find out who's fighting in your corner and empower you with ways you can influence those decisions which affect your business every single day. We proudly broadcast live on our local community radio station, Triple H 100.1 FM, the Community Broadcasting Network, and later wherever you get your favourite podcasts. Let's hear from this week's expert on Small Biz Matters. People, policy, purpose.
And that's right, we are live today welcoming Dr. Michael Shaper to the program. Dr. Michael Shaper, thank you for joining us. It's been a great pleasure to have you. You are, I would say, one of the leading advocates in the country for small business. You've been living and eating and breathing small business for so long, especially in the areas of policy. You're based in Canberra and you're really passionate about how small businesses operate and to make things better. So first of all, tell me about that journey. Tell me why it is that you've become so passionate about supporting the small business community.
Well, thanks, Alexi. Yes, small business is a really passionate thing for me, just as it is for people like yourself and, let's face it, for the 2.5 million small businesses that we have right across the country. For me, that journey started quite a long time ago when I had the very good fortune. I didn't come out of a small business background in terms of a family, although my parents did have one, you know, ill-fated short attempt like so many other small businesses at running a couple of sideline ventures. But no, not come out of a family of entrepreneurs, but rather I did a long time ago have the very good fortune to step in and take on a role managing a community small business advisory centre on the outskirts of Perth, well known as Business Enterprise Centres. And there was a network of them, for those of you who aren't familiar, right around the country of them providing advice, support, both for startups, for existing businesses. And it's there that you learn the cardinal rule, which is that small business isn't about business. It's about people, their dreams, their hopes, their aspirations, what they want for themselves, what they want for their family, what they want for their community, and in many cases, also what they want for this world at large as well. Because for many people, small business isn't just about making money. It's about their own creative endeavours. It's also about a chance to help make the world a better place. I know this might sound very altruistic, but it's also about the opportunity to find an idea and run with it. For many people, also the opportunity to say, I want to be my own boss, all of those things. And so at the end of the day, small business is about people. It's not about business. And when you work that out, then I think it becomes really easy to become passionate because you're in the business of helping people, not only the business operators, their employees, their families, their customers, the communities they live in. It's not about making dollars and cents per se.
Yeah, and it's such an important part of the economy and the GDP as a whole, and with small businesses collectively being such a large employer group, that obviously all comes with its complexity. And like I mentioned at the beginning of the program, franchising, it feels as though it's even more complex, even though in the way that you operate, you're buying into something that's supposed to be simpler and more straightforward. Could you take us through basically what a franchise agreement is and how it works between the two parties firstly?
Absolutely. I mean, in terms of metaphors, the other one is it's a bit like a marriage in some respects because you've got
two partners. So I did get it right when I said relationship. I was thinking that was
absolutely
the case.
Absolutely. Look, Alexi, on my journey, I've done a number of many different things, including helping start up one of the earliest small business teaching programs. And what we used to say at Curtin University where we ran that was that in a sense, franchising is a hybrid. If you want to go into business, small business, you've got this. Usually people think immediately of two options: start my own business from scratch with all the joys and terrors that that brings, or buy an existing enterprise, which of course requires a fair amount of knowledge, not to say money. But there is a third option, which is to take someone else's proven business model and use a license to operate it. And that's exactly what a franchise is. So you have a party that owns that intellectual property, that that trademark, a system of doing business, a well-known product, and they license it out to someone else to sell it in a particular territory. That's a typical franchise model. Think about fast food, think about cars traditionally. In fact, the very first franchise that people might well be aware of is actually Singer Sewing Machines back in the 1880s. So the Singer Sewing Company in the United States realized that they didn't really want to be in the business of actually selling sewing machines to the public. They quite like making them. So wouldn't it make so much more sense if they set up a system where there was an intermediary that actually oversaw the process of getting it distributed, sold, and so forth? And that's where the licensing idea behind modern day franchising comes from. So that's what we've got as a starting point. And so today, a franchise system in Australia, we're one of about 30 countries in the world that have a set of formal rules about how franchising operates. So yes, you have a licensing operation. In some countries like Singapore, it is very much just governed under the general laws of business contracts and relationships. But starting in about the 1970s, when the first American fast food franchises made their forays into Australia, think Hungry Jack's, think McDonald's, etc., franchising rapidly grew to occupy quite a significant part of the landscape. And so by the early 1990s, there was a bit of a call for a little bit more regulation of this area because some of those franchisees were finding that difficult to be able to negotiate with a multinational in terms of what's a reasonable relationship. How do I sort this out? So the aspects of the relationship are really three parts. What's it like to enter? What are the terms and conditions I enter into? What's it like being there? How do I settle disputes? And thirdly, if I want to get out, what are the terms and conditions on which I can leave? What do I walk away with? Because when you've got a license, you often don't, once the license ends, you often don't end up with anything like any residual goodwill. So they're the three major elements that have always bedeviled some of the problematic franchise systems and franchise relationships that people have. So over the years, we've developed first a voluntary, and since 1998, a formal legislated franchising code of conduct. And we're one of only about 30 countries in the world that have franchising-specific regulation. So it is quite unusual on a global scale compared to many other parts of the world. So this review has been look at the effectiveness of that code. This is not the first time the code's been reviewed. In fact, it's kind of been reviewed many times, and in fact one of my recommendations was please stop having so many reviews in future, because we've had plenty of them, thank you very much. But there is an interesting story to tell, and in fact what we'll find, Alexi, I'll go through these if you want to in a second, but a big issue is about what's the real level of dispute. Are franchise systems, franchisors, are they big and sophisticated as we all think they are, and what do we need to do in the future to make the system work better than it has been? So if you're happy with that, let me run you through those quickly. The first one is in terms of what's the level of dispute. Well, it's actually really hard to tell. when you have a review, it's often an invitation for people to raise grievances and come out. And I went through, I spoke to small business commissioners, as you mentioned before. I'd been small business commissioner myself for the ACT when that was in existence, and set up the National Small Business Commissioners Network when I was at the ACCC. Most of them didn't have a lot of data. In fact, many of them were saying we have so few that we almost don't keep count of them anymore. And they're often hidden under things like disputes, business-to-business disputes under a different heading almost, for example, leases, property, et cetera. So we didn't actually know. Even the ASBEFIO, the Small Business Ombudsman's Office, didn't have on its record a very large number of disputes. Now, does that mean the system works really well, or does it mean that people aren't talking about it? Who knows? It's a really hard one to prove. You can't prove a negative either.
Well, that's what I was just going to ask that, actually, yeah. Because you mentioned before when those three sets of grievances occur, and then immediately my mind went to, well, how do we know that? How do we establish that? And I wonder whether or not there's a bit of a psychology here that small business people who are forking out all of this money, sometimes a lot of their savings they save up to be able to purchase a franchise license. Is that a reluctance to say that something's not working because ultimately it was their decision in the first place and they're sort of maybe a bit regretful about forking out all that money and they're a little bit embarrassed? I mean, did you get any feeling from what that was initially around those complaints?
One of the big issues that bedevils this whole area, and indeed, Alexi, bedevils, I think, a whole host of small business policy issues, is the lack of evidence. We don't in Australia have a very sophisticated or well-developed body of knowledge about the small business sector. In fact, when I started teaching at a small business management and the Curtin Business School, at the time, I think I was probably, there was only a handful of people teaching small business units around the country. We met regularly, but there weren't many of us. You could cram us not quite into a telephone booth, but you could cram us into a small franchise coffee shop without a problem. But and even then, people weren't accessing the information that was available, like the Bureau of Statistics. And the reason I raise this is that this issue still exists today right across the small business, the family business, and the franchising sectors. So what's the level of disputation? Hard to know because it's not been measured particularly well. Our counterparts in places like Western Europe over the years have done a lot more work on measuring business disputation than Australia has. And so you can start to work out some rough rules of thumb, but it's hard. It's really hard to tell because even at the state level, different small business commissioners keep different council records. You can, if you've got a complaint, you can go, or you should, you're asked in the first instance to go and talk to your own franchisor. Sometimes that resolves it. So that doesn't show up in any official statistics, whereas some other people might go straight to the Small Business Ombudsman and to Bruce Bilson. Big call out to Bruce there again, as usual, and for assistance. So it's really hard to work out just how many there were. In fact, even the figures you cited about the numbers of franchise systems were a guess because no one actually knew what we had been doing up until this review.
That's really interesting because those figures came out of the Franchising Council themselves. But I suppose even an overarching body like that is only representing those that are members of the council. So there may still be franchises out there who aren't members.
Yeah, look, a good call on the Franchise Council anyway, because they did actually come reasonably close to what the real figure is. We had the ABS, the Bureau of Statistics, look at it for the purposes of this review. And we came out for the first time with a solid set of statistics, and also helped by the fact that since the last review, you're required by law, franchisors are required to be on an online database called the Franchise Disclosure Registry, which anyone can access. If you know how to find it, you're welcome to go and use it. So today we have, and there are some franchise systems that actually have multiple legal entities. So if you strip that out, we've got just over 1,140 franchise systems, 1,140 franchise systems. We've got about 70,000 franchisees. So we know roughly how many we've got now. The interesting thing about Alexi is that most of those franchisors are themselves quite small businesses with only a real small number of individual franchisees. It's mirroring a bit the small business community as a whole. So you get a cohort, probably about, we reckon, somewhere in the vicinity of maybe 280 franchise systems that the very clever boffins at the ABS have looked at and said, these look like they are large, sophisticated and complex systems. They're international, they've got a large number of employees, so forth. And most of the rest are actually very small franchisees indeed, and sometimes only have a handful of franchisees operating for them.
So can I ask you a question? Does that mean that if we've got more, you know, we've got strong, robust, large companies who you would assume are doing things correctly and by the letter of the law and are fair and equitable in the way they treat their franchisees, and then you've got a whole bunch of smaller ones. I mean, in your research, did you find that the problems more stemmed from, less mature franchise models, or were they just as equal in both camps?
It wasn't possible to gauge that because at this stage, we can now find and identify, thanks to the disclosure registry, we can now find all the franchise systems in the country, and we surveyed all of them as part of this. And I've recommended that in future reviews should also do that, so we start actually measuring changes over time, like what are the trends there. But to find franchisees, and there's about 70,000 of those across the country, it's very hard and it's very voluntary. And so you typically don't get great response rates. And of course, the people who are most incentivized to respond are the people that have got an issue they want to raise, as opposed to the people who go, look, I'm very happy with where I've got to. One of the small bodies of research looking at franchise relationships in Australia has actually, and we cited this in the report, has actually said, look, the evidence suggests that when you get into a franchise, it can be a little bit rocky at the start. Then there's a great honeymoon period. Then there's a little bit of rockiness. Then there's a long period of stability, like a mature, sophisticated, long-term personal relationship. And then when it comes to an end, well, either that's rocky or it's not through anyone's fault. So it does appear that there is a bit of a predictable wave about how things happen and where they go to. Obviously, small franchise systems aren't going to have the skills and the knowledge to deal with franchisors and the franchisees in the same way. And we have actually recommended in this review that one of the things perhaps needs to be done. In the past, we've always concentrated on franchisees, educating people before they go into the franchise systems, making sure they know what's coming up so that they're not going in with rose-coloured glasses. But perhaps we also need to spend a bit more time helping those small franchise systems better deal with their franchisees. And there's a benefit for everyone in that. There's a benefit, obviously, just in terms of those one-to-one business relationships, less disputes. But also, if we want to create a group of entrepreneurial, successful, growing, indeed world-class franchises that are Australian by origin, then we actually, there's no harm in us actually trying to upskill them, because at the moment we assume that you're good enough to do that all on your own.
Well, you know, that's a really good point here, because we're not just talking about something that operates just within the boundaries of Australia. This is a potential export market. We, in some ways, are innovative. We do things well. We are fast adopters of technology. We understand how to grow businesses in a fairly highly regulated environment. This is an exportable model that we can give to the rest of the world. And is that something that we need to consider in terms of how much regulation small businesses here go for, have to be put under?
We do. We certainly do. I mean, there's a sobering set of statistics pulling out now about, you know, how many new employing businesses are being created in the country, and the figures seem to suggest that that's actually not looking terribly strong at the moment. To come back into the franchising sector, specifically, I think that one of the really interesting things is that we estimate, as I said before, 1,140 or thereabouts franchise systems. The interesting thing is that's not that far removed from the figure that was being used as a guesstimate 10 years ago. But in 10 years, this overall business population in Australia, the overall size of the SME sector has grown. It's grown by 20-25%. So it's grown dramatically. But in absolute terms, the number of franchise systems and franchisees hasn't grown.
That's very interesting. Look, we're going to take
That's sobering.
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. You have to sort of balance out, and this is what you were going to talk about in terms of data. You have to have the data in the first place to be able to make those comparisons and really understand where the difference is between what's happening in the overall economy versus what's happening in a sector like franchisees. We're going to take a quick break here on Small Biz Matters and go to consumer announcements. And when we come back, we'll talk to Dr. Michael Shaper some more about the franchise code review just completed in 2024, some of those key recommendations, and how recommendations like this review can influence other areas of policy. We'll be back after this.
This episode of Small Biz Matters is proudly sponsored by the Australian Small Business and Family Enterprise Ombudsman's Office. ASBIFIO assists, advocates and provides information to Australia's 2.5 million small and family businesses when and where they need it. ASBIFIO delivers practical and actionable advice and research to governments on how to improve policies and legislation. Since its inception, ASBIFIO has responded to over 40,000 requests for assistance from Australian small and family businesses and provides access to dispute resolution services, including assistance with disputes that fall under the franchising, dairy, horticulture and oil codes. ASBIFIO also connects small and family business with mental health support should the need arise. As an independent advocate for small business owners, ASBIFIO is committed to ensuring that Australia is the best place to start, grow or transform a business now and well into the future. See how ASBIFIO can support you at asbfeo.gov.au.
And welcome back to Small Biz Matters, People, Policy, Purpose. We're talking to Dr. Michael Shaper all about the franchise code review, which was recently completed and authored by him, now available on the Australian Treasury website. And an interesting read because it's not only giving us a bit of a reflection on what's happening in franchising and some recommendations that the government should be undertaking, but also looking at small businesses as a whole. Franchising can be considered a little bit of a window into the soul of small businesses and how they're doing, particularly when it comes to contracts. So, Michael, just before the break, we were talking a little bit and you mentioned some of the recommendations that have come out, and they're really quite important. And that's what the purpose of these reviews are, is for the government to listen, for you to do this body of research, really listen to the small business community and for them to take on board some of those recommendations. If you had to cherry pick your top three of the code, what do you think you would like to see happen in, say, the next 1 to 2 years?
Look, what we've the biggest suggestions are made is the first one is that perhaps we consider moving from a highly legalistic set of rules to a licensing regime. That's number one. I'll come back to that in a quick sec. The second one is at the same time that instead of having at the moment a bit of a hodgepodge of some penalties apply if you break some parts of the franchising code but not others, that we make it universal. And the third one is a requirement on franchisors that they give franchisees a reasonable opportunity to make a return on their investment. Okay, so let me run you through each of those. So at the moment, the franchising code of conduct is basically a schedule in addition to the Competition and Consumer Act. So it's enforced by the ACCC. And during the 10 years that I had the good fortune to be the deputy chair there, we saw a large amount of progress in terms of the introduction of penalties for some breaches. Before that, even if the law was broken, there was no penalty for breaking it. And I think you and I would both kind of sit there and kind of go, how does that work? And really it was one of those, and this is exactly what's happening today as we speak with things like the Food and Grocery Code, where the law says one thing, but there is no penalty for breaking it. So that was a major change to get that through. But what we do have is a highly legalistic regime, and every time there's a review, there's generally requirements for more disclosure about this, more fine-tuning of a particular issue. But what it does mean is that organisations like the ACCC, which are a multi-purpose regulator that govern everything from airlines, airline landing rights through to shipping, through to merger laws, through to consumer laws, through to product safety, through to children's button batteries and so forth, also have to look after franchising. So the big suggestion that I put on the table, and one in which the ACCC itself was advocating, was perhaps thinking about a model like the Financial Complaints Authority, AFCA, or the Telco Industry Ombudsman, namely an industry-run self-regulatory regime with equal representation from both franchisees and franchisors and some independents, setting up a framework and giving licenses to operate franchise systems to parties that meet those requirements. We do it in all sorts of industries already today.
So could I just ask a quick layman's question? Basically, what you're suggesting there is that there's a buy-in from each of those relationships, franchisees and franchisors do a little bit of funding, and the government would fund such an ombudsman as well. You would make sure that they had enough powers to actually undertake what it is that they were overseeing. But then also you would have a situation where they manage the licenses, so the licenses come to them and they disseminate them. Is that what you said, or did I get that wrong?
Not quite that. Let me give you the Financial Complaints Authority, AFCA. If you want to operate a very similar model in mind, if you want to operate a financial service like a bank or any other financial service, you have to be a member of a company called the Australian Financial Complaints Authority. It's not a government body, it's an independent one, but it is required to have equal representation from finance industry, the consumer sector, and independents on it. And they set the framework. And also, as a result, one of the other big conditions of that belonging to AFCA is if there's a dispute, typically a customer dispute with a bank is a classic one, that they agree to operate under AFCA's decision-making system. And just AFCA employs literally hundreds of mediators. So if you've got a complaint, you ring up the bank and go, I've been mischarged. The bank says, no, you haven't. You ring up AFCA, and AFCA basically goes through it. And the bank is required to follow AFCA's rules in order to get to a decision on it.
So given the size of the franchising industry, it would be justified to have these complaints addressed by an independent body, and then everyone has an agreement that they would abide by the decisions of that ombudsman.
Yeah. And there's very clear ways these operate today, right around whether we're talking about financial services, telecommunications is another one, gas, electricity and energy is a third one, energy ombudsman. They all operate in a similar model. And it's not that the board of that body actively itself, they employ professional mediators who make a decision, and that's slightly the third person. Consider the alternative which we have today. If you or I as a franchisee are unhappy about something with a franchisor, we can go and try and talk to the franchisor, but if that doesn't resolve the issue, I've only got two options left. I can go to the ACCC and they can put it into their list of, they get more than 400,000 queries and complaints a year right across everything they've got, the whole ambit, and you may get taken up, but I'll tell you what, I can speak from first-hand experience, do not have capacity to deal with everyone's individual complaints.
Well, exactly. And you mentioned before that those complaints can come in different forms. They can have fairly minor complaints about something not being delivered as promised, or all the way through to, well, this is just simply not working and I've done everything that I've been asked to do and it's not showing me the return on my investment.
Yeah. You can go to the Ombudsman's office, but the Ombudsman doesn't have any formal power. The Ombudsman's office can offer, Small Business Ombudsman can offer a mediator, but there's no compunction on either party to cop the decision that's made at the moment. Well, my third one is I can go to court and I can spend a good average price of a litigation for a small business today in Australia is well over $100,000. And you're looking at, on average, several months, if not a couple of years. So in practical terms, that doesn't work for many, justice denied for most small businesses because you can't get that sorted out. And likewise, also, there are times when franchisors might be trying to, I want to sort this out, I want to get the friend relationship back on the way in. Going through a legal system is not the best way for people to sort out if they've got a grievance with each other. A bit like marriage counselling. Sometimes you actually need, but it's compulsory marriage counselling in this case. And that would be, you agree to abide by those rules in order to have a licence to operate a franchise in this country. That's the proposal. And what I've recommended to government is this is a big step. It needs a lot more talking about it. This is part of us raising it here and people need to think about it, but it's worked in a number of other industries and it's probably preferable in my mind to the highly legalistic, adversarial, expensive and time-consuming system that we have through the courts at the moment.
Could I ask you about that, where the what the journey is for a small business owner if they're going to put up a dispute with their franchisor? Is it always through the federal court? Is it through small claims? How expensive can it be when it gets quite serious? I mean, where do they go to get mediation and then actually get resolution to their dispute through the courts?
Well, at the moment, if you have a dispute, the first thing under the code is you're encouraged to obviously contact your franchisor and see if you can't just sort it out. That's a common sense first reaction. If that fails to work, then you can use there's almost a multiplicity of different options, which is why it's hard to keep track of the real level of disputes. You could, for example, choose to go to a small business commissioner, if one exists in your state, and ask for them to help with the mediation. Alternatively, you could go at the federal body, SBFEO, the Small Business and Family Enterprise Ombudsman, and they can appoint a mediator. Conversely, you may just agree with your franchisor that you want a mediator yourself just directly. You don't have to go through a third party to do that. If those don't work, though, then you can go to courts. And it depends, but generally, small claims tribunals are something in the vicinity of under $20,000. There's no representation that can work. But if you want to litigate on a matter, you need to go through the courts. And then it can get even more confusing because there is at least one state, South Australia, which actually has its own franchising regulations as well. So generally they're not used, which is probably on balance a good thing, because if they were, then we'd have multiple different legal systems buying into this as well. So there are different ways to get there. There's no one path as such. This would, I think, streamline what I'm suggesting here with the licensing regime is streamline it, make it easy for franchisees, make it easy for franchisors, and both sides would also have representation in the governance of the entity. Yep. Doesn't mean the board would make the final decision. No, not at all. That's not a good way to run a dispute resolution, but they'd be overseeing the system and making sure that the rules that franchisees and franchisors have to abide by are the rules that the industry has come to an agreement on, rather than at the moment Parliament makes them.
Well, we certainly like a good streamlined system, that's for sure. It might be actually a way that we can actually see some delivery on a deregulation or a lack, a reduction in red tape. Look, we've only got about 3 minutes left here, but I just wanted to ask you very quickly, you mentioned a couple of other recommendations. Can you run us through what you're hoping that the government will endeavour?
The first one is penalties. There are, at the moment, if under the current system, you do get penalties for some breaches of the franchise code, but not for others. And you, the ability to issue infringement notices, a bit like a speeding fine, so that if the law is broken, you can issue, be more active in being able to issue infringement notices rather than go through courts. That's a important, really important term. And the final one is under the franchise code at the moment, for the last 2 years, motor vehicles and only motor vehicle dealers are required to have a requirement that says you've got to have a reasonable opportunity to make a return on your investment. It's a good provision. It works in that sector, and there's no reason why it shouldn't exist right throughout the whole franchising community. And in fact, I would have thought that most franchisors and certainly franchisees would actually be party to that anyway. Of course, both sides have got to win out of this. So most franchisors are doing the right thing. Let me be really clear about that. These rules are usually about trying to deal with those that aren't. We just don't make sure that the people that are doing the right thing are paying a price because of the poor behaviour of a small group.
That's such a good point to make and to end on. Look, thank you so much for joining us on the program, Michael. Where can people find out about the franchising code?
They can go to the Treasury website. That's where the review contents are. The franchising code itself, if you go to the ACCC website, you'll find a bevy of information, ACCC.gov.au. That's the Australian Competition and Consumer Commission, as well as BEFIO as well. We've actually recommended the introduction of a one-size-fits-all website called Franchise Smart, where hopefully in future you'll be able to go to the one place and get it all.
That's fantastic. And again, streamlining things, have a one area that where small businesses go to and have all of their questions answered. And that's really what we're calling for here. Reduce the red tape, improve the communication, and work with the trusted pathways such as yourself to deliver what's needed for small business. Thank you so much for joining us on the program, Michael. Now stay with us. After a short break, we'll be back. We'll hear from what we've got coming on the program next week. And I'd like to thank Michael once again for joining us on the program.
Thanks, Alexi. A real pleasure.
Great to chat. We'll be back after this. Just before the break, we were speaking to Dr. Michael Shaper and unpacking the 2024 Franchise Code Review, an important body of work not only to examine what's happening in those relationships between franchisees and franchisors, but looking at the future of the industry and what can be done in the government's perspective to support small businesses going through that. It's not a small part of the economy. It's a large chunk of our GDP. They employ over 500,000 employees across Australia. So it's a sector we really need to look after. And it's a great way in which the government can support small businesses by offering a little bit more of a streamlined regulation. If you missed any of today's program, you can catch up via our website radio.smallbizmatters.com.au or wherever you get your podcasts. There's over 228 podcasts to listen to over the years and some fascinating discussions. Speaking of fascinating discussions, let's have a look at who we've got on the program next week. We're going to be joined by Tim Beresford, who's the CEO of the Australian Financial Security Authority. We're going to talk about the PPSR. What is it? Why do small businesses, associations and advisors need to know about it? And how it could be a really valuable, free, important tool to use in your business. So if you're curious about that, join us next week. I'd like to thank you again for joining me, and I will speak to you all again in a week's time.